At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The episode in which we separate the inflation forest from the inflation trees. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday today, the 12th of January. Good as always to have you along, everybody. I'm going to mix my metaphors right here at the top. Apologies in advance. We are, in fact, going to do a little forest for the trees with this morning's release of the December Consumer Price Index. But what we've got here just as a headline is a little bit of half full, half empty. Consumer prices were up 6.5% over the past year. That is all in, which is to say with the always volatile food and energy components. And 6.5%, as you know, is way more than 2%, which is where the Federal Reserve wants inflation to be. On the other hand, which I guess is actually a third metaphor, I'm sorry, inflation has been slowing since June. In fact, 6.5% is the smallest year-over-year increase since October of 2021. Marketplace's Justin Ho is on the glass half-full beat today.
On average, prices actually fell in December compared to the month before, when you factor in things like energy costs, which dropped, and food prices, which went up, but more slowly. Caleb Bruhn at Morning Consult says people notice that kind of thing.
So when you see grocery costs at least grow less quickly, that's something that I think consumers will be happy about.
Food and energy prices are notoriously volatile, so economists like to focus on what they call core prices, basically the cost of everything else. Bruhn says many of those prices have been coming down too.
Autos, for example, used cars have been dropping for a while. New cars also came down this month.
For months, used car prices were a huge cause of inflation. But Lizanne Saunders at Charles Schwab says the factors that pushed up those prices are largely behind us.
That reflected that point in time where, you know, new car sales were imploding because new cars couldn't be finished because there was no access to semiconductors.
Saunders says she's also watching the three-month average of core inflation. In 2022, that average hit 8%, but now it's down to just over 3%.
So that is clearly in the direction that the Fed would like to see. And unless we have some renewed uptick, that three-month annualized rate should continue to decelerate.
If that continues, Laura Veldkamp at Columbia Business School says it's possible that the economy could avoid a recession. Veldkamp says in the past, the Federal Reserve has brought down prices by engineering recessions. But now?
Given that the prices are falling without the recession, I would hope that we don't need to squeeze the economy so hard to cause a recession after that.
In other words, the Fed has plenty of reasons to reduce the speed of its interest rate hikes. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
So Justin gave us the forest there, the big picture, the glass half full look at this morning's CPI. The glass half empty, as we begin looking at the inflation trees, if you will, begins with housing, which stayed stubbornly high in December. The shelter index was up 0.8% month to month and 7.5% year over year. And that is happening even with a big slowdown in the housing market, with both rents and home prices falling of late. Marketplace's Amy Scott explains what's going on there.
Quick refresher, the government measures housing inflation by looking at rent and what's called owner's equivalent rent.
What a homeowner's home might rent for if it were to be a rental.
Igor Popov is chief economist at Apartment List. Both measures in the CPI rose by 0.8% last month. But Popov says if you look at spot rents, what landlords were charging on new leases.
In our December data, rents fell nationally 0.8%. Incidentally, that's the opposite of what shelter inflation did.
He says spot rents have been falling for the past 4 months, but that's going to take a while to show up in the CPI estimates.
Because they're meant to represent what average Americans are paying for their rent, and average Americans don't renew their leases every single month.
Similarly, the lag between home prices and the CPI can be 12 to 16 months, says economist Mickey Levy at Berenberg Capital Markets. And he expects rent and owner's equivalent rent to go up a bit further in the CPI.
But then they will subside and come down fairly significantly, you know, beginning in the second half of the year.
Given how much weight shelter carries in the overall CPI, about a third, I wondered if that lag was making inflation look worse than it is. Jay Parsons is chief economist for RealPage, a real estate software and analytics firm. He says there's a live debate about that among some economists.
Bottom line is that the rental market has dramatically cooled off, and the CPI at this point is the only data set that's not reflecting that.
And it's funny, when I called Apartment List Igor Popov this morning, he reminded me that we had the inverse of this conversation almost exactly 1 year ago, when the CPI wasn't capturing the sharp increases in rent. What a difference a year can make. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
That's a good little tidbit right there, that thing in the end. Wall Street on this CPI day, moderately enthused, you could say. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. So that was five-ish minutes, I guess, about this morning's inflation news. We're going to do a couple of more minutes later because it's inflation. First, though, a quick small business detour to somebody who's caught in the middle of the retail inflation calculation. Kristen Tallheimer Bingham is one of our regulars. She's the co-owner of Dean's Sweets. They're in Portland, Maine.
Business has slowed for the moment. That said, I'm happy also that we still have our year-round business to keep us going. We have hotels that we work with and our website and our two stores and still some special orders right now. But the pace is much less hectic than it was in December. Costs have leveled out mostly. We always try to order way in advance of what we need, so we should have enough chocolate and cocoa and sugar for the coming months. There's still one strangely difficult item for us to get, which is a 56% semi-sweet chocolate that we use in our truffles. But that's less of a supply chain issue than it is just that the chocolate itself is in short supply. Regarding our prices, they are stable now, thankfully. We haven't had to change our prices again, unless something really unforeseen happens, which I know it always can. Dean and I are going into our 19th year in this chocolate business, and we've certainly had some bumpy spots over the years, for example, hiring people who weren't the right fit. But when we find the right people for the job, we do everything in our power to make the conditions where they feel happy and want to stay with us. We're taking things a bit slower after the holidays, and several people on our team have taken some time off to get rested. Chocolate making is fun. It's an upbeat business, but it also has its repetitive sides, and we also do our best to change things up frequently. Then, of course, there's pay and benefits and flexibility, and we try to keep our eyes on all of that, and so far, that all has helped us keep our amazing team together. Our biggest challenge going forward, at least in the short term, is to get our inventory back up and ready for Valentine's Day. We need to rebuild our inventory of basically everything. Truffles, caramels, bars, hot chocolate, Valentine's Day season is quite short compared to the holiday season in November and December. And it's also very last minute for most people. So really, we've got about a two-week period that will be quite busy and pretty intense. So we need to be ready for that.
Kristen Tallheimer Bingham working hard making chocolate at Dean's Sweets in Portland, Maine. We're going to get new figures on Chinese economic growth next week, Tuesday, and chances are they are going to be underwhelming. Big chunks of the second biggest economy in the world have been shut down on and off over the past couple of years as China stuck real hard to its zero COVID policy. That went away, zero COVID did, mostly, just last month. So there's a lot riding on how Chinese consumers react to that. As Marketplace's Jennifer Pack reports, it starts with just going out.
Movie theaters in China were frequently closed without notice during the country's strict zero COVID policy. Moviegoers never knew when cinemas would be open. That put off film lovers like Danny Xu in eastern Anhui province.
Usually I go to the movie theater twice a month, but during the pandemic, I've cut down to once a month.
The last movie he saw was the Avatar sequel, The Way of Water. But the film's opening weekend on December 16th took in just under $60 million at the Chinese box office, far less than the $100 million expected. By then, almost all the pandemic restrictions were gone. But people were either recovering from COVID or feared getting sick if they went to the cinema. Avatar fan Yuan Mengyi in Beijing said she wanted to see the film, but would only risk going when the theaters were less crowded. Right now, she's in a buoyant mood and says in the year ahead, she wants to get out and spend.
I want to travel now, maybe to Hainan province.
Without the restrictions, people can now splash out and move about more freely. When I traveled with friends from Shanghai to the southern port city of Xiamen just after Christmas, everything went smoothly. Though our baggage took a while to come out. Many airport staff had called in sick. Coughing and ambulance sirens became the soundtrack to our trip. Despite media reports of overcrowded hospitals and crematoriums, China has only officially recorded 45 COVID deaths since late November. A short $5 ferry ride, and we arrive at Gulang Island. The first 3 days were so quiet. Very nice for tourists, but not for business. Our local taxi driver says he's happy the country is finally reopening. Well, reopening may be overstating it. At a nearby tourist village, elderly residents put on their mask when they spotted me and my friends and then shut their doors. The taxi driver says it'll take time for everything to open up again. A loudspeaker ad for sea worm jelly, a local delicacy, at the Xiamen Seafood Market echoed down an empty street. Some stores were closed. They've gone out of business, says this convenience shop owner. Yeah, the lockdowns here were strict, he says. We had metal fences in front of our stores for most of 2021, and the rent was so high, they couldn't afford it, he says. He says he's out of hand sanitizers that I want. Anything COVID-related is gone. On New Year's Eve, we landed in northwestern China's Xi'an City. A year ago, it had a harsh lockdown, where at least one pregnant woman was denied access to the hospital and miscarried. Cities like Xi'an are trying hard to move past the trauma of zero COVID. As New Year dawned, young people filled the streets along Xi'an city walls that date back to the Ming Dynasty. The crowd set off pink, white, and blue fireworks. A souvenir vendor in the Muslim quarter says more people are coming out, but they're not buying. I sold, what, $3 today, she says? She doesn't expect business to improve until foreign tourists are allowed back in. And so far, China is not issuing tourist visas to foreigners. As for domestic consumers, some are spending money, but more on practical things. Again, Avatar fan Yuan Mengyi.
I bought online courses in psychology, photography, and editing. It has nothing to do with my field in finance, but I want to expand my knowledge.
Because she says, with the weak economy, she needs a plan B in case she's out of a job. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Having folks know that it's possible has been really enlightening.
Anything is possible, gang. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is up 216 points on this Thursday. 0.6%, 34,189. The NASDAQ, 69 points higher, also 0.6%, 11,001. On the NASDAQ, the S&P 500 rose 13 points, 0.3%, 39.83. We heard from Amy Scott about the rise in rents last month as reflected in the CPI. Looking at some rental real estate stocks, then Compass Incorporated upgraded almost 9% today. Zillow grew 2.4%. Redfin upsold 5.7%. Another thing the CPI shows us, prices for used cars and trucks dropped a bit. In used vehicle stocks, Carvana absolutely floored it, 46%. AutoNation sped up 0.4%. CarMax, however, braked 0.8%. Bonds up, yield on the 10-year T-note down 3.44%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. As we said, inflation in the last month of 2022 came in at 6.5% year on year. That makes six straight months of ever smaller increases in consumer prices. Don't get me wrong, they're still going up, just more slowly. And then there's food, up 10.4% last month. That's year on year. And food has been going up faster than overall inflation every month since July. In particular, cereals and baked goods, including cookies. Because the Bureau of Labor Statistics does track cookies 18% annually, if that's of interest. Marketplace's Sabrina Benishore has more now on why prices for baked goods are costing so much extra dough.
A good number of ingredients go into donuts, flour, milk, sugar, but the secret ingredient is love. Just kidding, just kidding. It's the secret ingredient is actually inflation. Donna Siafakis has owned Peter Pan Donuts in Greenpoint, Brooklyn for the last 30 years.
The ingredients have gone up, and the one that I would say the most is eggs. At one time, they were 99 cents a dozen, and now they were close to $4 a dozen. That's wholesale.
Flour's up too, so are a lot of things.
I used to pay $47 for a cube of shortening. Now it had gone almost to $100 a cube. Now it's settled down. It's like in the 80s.
Sifaka says she's absorbed as much as she can, and during COVID, she refused to raise prices.
But when COVID settled down, we went from $15.99 a dozen to $17.99 a dozen because everything was ridiculous.
Baked goods are special in a way because so many of the main ingredients have seen exceptional inflation. Eggs are up in part because bird flu has killed 60 million birds. Corn futures, soy, and wheat prices are all still trading near record highs, says Naomi Bloom, senior market advisor for Total Farm Marketing.
Supplies of food, not only in the world, but in the United States, are still tight from year-ago levels. It's not going to get fixed quickly. It's going to take perfect weather this spring and the summer in the United States to get it fixed.
It's not just weather and bird flu. There's also demand. David Ortega is a food economist at Michigan State University.
And when we look at the holiday period that we're coming off of, that's where a lot of the baking takes place. So there's increased demand.
And finally, donuts are sticky, and so are basic food prices. Colin Carter is a professor of agricultural economics at UC Davis.
The prices of these staples tend to go up when the price of inputs go up, but they don't change downward. They're sticky in terms of moving downwards.
But back at Peter Pan Donuts, Donna Siafakis says she refuses to raise the price of a cup of coffee, at least. It's a dollar, and always will be, she says. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
According to the United States Department of Agriculture, black farmers are just about 1%, 1.4% precisely, of all farmers in this economy. Ashanti Williams and Arian Rivera are two of them. They're with the Blackyard Farm Collective, where on top of day-to-day farming, they're trying to get communities of color into sustainable farming practices and land ownership overall. We talked to them in late 2021 about getting set up on a new farm in upstate New York. And we figure now is as good a time as any for an update. Ashanti, Arian, how have you been?
Been good. Been busy, but good.
Well, so tell me about busy. I understand, first of all, you have moved since the last time we spoke. And I don't imagine it's an easy thing to do to move a farm.
We have moved. Yes, it's been quite challenging. We had some issues with the lease arrangement at the last property, and we have since moved to another part of New York, and we started up last March.
How do you start up a farm when you move? I mean, that's more a logistics thing, right? Because you got to move all the animals, you got to figure out your produce, right?
Yeah, and it's just kind of getting acquainted with new land and building infrastructure. Sometimes places come with stuff. Luckily for us here, like, there was already a barn, but we had to put up a new greenhouse. And this spring, we'll be putting up a new high tunnel. So,
what's a high tunnel?
It's like a greenhouse that you grow in the ground season extension.
Gotcha. What does it mean when you said we have to get used to the land or figure out the land? I mean, what's involved in that?
So the soil is different. It holds water differently. It drains differently. It requires different nutrients. And so the vegetables grow differently at this property than they did at our prior property.
Yeah. And you don't know that until, like, you kind of do, like, soil tests and stuff, so.
Yeah, which makes total sense. It also occurs to me that fundamentally what you have done is you have relocated a small business. And as with any business, you have to have customers, you have to find markets. Since you have relocated your small farming business, have you had to sort of refigure out what your market is?
Kind of. So one of the big markets that we do is in Schenectady, and that was about the same distance from the last property that we were at as this one. So in terms of, like, finding, like, a market that we sell stuff at, it hasn't been super challenging. But some of our wholesale clients have changed because of that. Yep.
So not you know, specifics if you don't want to, but what kind of clients?
Just like different restaurants. Or last season, we actually worked with a couple of different food pantries. So plugging into different people who will buy stuff wholesale in larger quantities.
I imagine, this is more commentary on hunger in America. I imagine food pantries are eager for your produce and what you have to offer.
they've been one of our primary sources of income. And we've also like really enjoyed going into the cities and dropping off food at different locations.
Tell me about dropping food in town.
So we were able to link up with some churches and we did deliveries in the South Bronx.
And like being able to sell through the food pantries has been like great because the food pantries usually are partnered with different nonprofits and they're able to buy our produce at the prices that we need for us to actually sustain our business. But the folks in the Bronx are able to receive that food at no cost. So yeah. It's a win-win.
So Ariane, let me ask you this. Where do you see, you know, assuming you figure out the new land and you can grow what you need to grow and sell it the way you need to sell it, where do you see yourself and the Blackyard Farm Collective in like 5 years? I mean, are you off and running now? I the reason I ask is because last time we spoke, you sort of felt like you had had a good start and then you got knocked sideways and now you kind of have to start all over again.
So unfortunately, land access is a real issue for a lot of beginning farmers. But I think we have a home in this piece of land that we're at now. And I think in 5 years, we'll have purchased this piece of land. We'll have a mortgage in our names. We'll be paying towards ownership and we'll have welcomed hopefully 2 to 3 more members to the collective who are also cultivating the land with us.
Last thing, and then I'll let you go. When we spoke last time, we talked a little bit about you all wanting to raise the profile and make Black farmers more visible. I mean, I think they are something like, as I said in the introduction, like 1% of all farmers in the United States. You making progress, do you think, Ashanti?
I think so. We actually got to work with a group of school children at the end of 2022. And just like listening to their stories and hearing how they have been inspired has been like great. It's just like I think visibility really does a lot in addition to, you know, actually creating spaces for folks to be. But like just having folks know that it's possible has been really enlightening.
All right, so this is a silly question, but do you tell them how hard it is that you have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to milk the cows and feed the chickens and you got to, you know, do harvest time and all that?
Absolutely. I feel like there is no point in romanticizing it.
that's fair. Ashanti Williams, Ariane Rivera, they're with the Blackyard Farm Collective up in New York. Thanks to you both. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This final note on the way out today, rare citation of Bon Appetit on this program. There is news in the world of fast food that I saw on Bon Appetit today. And let me just say, I am not going to get into which chain has the best burgers, but the eastern parts of this country are going to have another contender. In-N-Out, a near iconic chain out here, said this week it's going to expand east. It's setting up a regional office in Tennessee, first actual restaurant to open in 2026. Animal fries, extra crispy. Trust me. Here is your moment of economic context on the way out. Comes to us courtesy of economics writer Joey Politano, who apparently has been reading my mind. The most troubling part of today's CPI report? Coffee prices up almost 15% year on year. It's killing me. John Buckley, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. Amir Babawe is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.